Chris Grant, I would have thought that you would have been, you know, King Podcast Supreme. I would have thought that you would know your way around a podcast.
Do you know how they say you never forget how to ride a bicycle?
Yeah.
I just fell off a bike.
Yeah. You fell off the bike a long, long time ago.
No, yeah.
And then
you're like struggling to climb back onto the bike and it keeps rolling.
Is it one of those tall, like it's a penny farthing?
I fell off bike about 2 years ago, and then I just laid down on the road.
Bikes are so different now. It's like that scene in Total Recall where it's like, he doesn't know how to use the shells. Is that Total Recall?
No, here's what it is.
Demolition Man. God.
I was Arnold Schwarzenegger in Total Recall, and then I went back to be recalled again. Okay. That's that story. And all of a sudden, Colin Farrell's there, and it's like, what is going on?
Start the reactor.
I always knew that Ludwig was propping you guys up on that show.
You guys. Me and
I'm a continued season podcast professional.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I didn't get off the bike. The bike. I am the bike. I am the bike.
That means Chris was riding you 2 years ago.
Felt like that sometimes. My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best thing of the week.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best thing of the week.
My name is not Chris Plan, it's Chris Grant, and I'm not sure if I know the best thing of the week, but I'm going to do my best, and I'm going to work really hard.
My name is Russ Rutschick, and I know the best game of the week.
Every week,
I know you don't listen to our podcast, and I don't blame you, but he does that all the time.
I know. Every week, people listen in,
they hear, oh, the Besties have a substitute. I hope it's Russ Rutschick this time. And that intro is. Just hits them sonically.
Substitute those lies for fact. What can I say?
This is the Besties, where we talk about the latest and greatest in art, sandwiches, sculpture, music, movies, TV, film, and games. This week we're focusing on games as we talk about the latest and greatest in interactive entertainment. Guys, it's not just Pong anymore.
Nope.
You know?
I heard that.
It seems like only yesterday that arcades started springing up. Ms. Pac-Man, I don't get what's so different from her from regular Pac-Man.
Remember this noise from your childhood? Donkey Kong, Donkey Kong, Donkey Kong, Donkey Kong. Well, games have grown up. Now this one lets you fuck things.
What?
It's called Fable.
Guys, I brought my favorite arcade game of the week. I should. Mm-hmm. I'll show myself out. Sorry.
It's Klax. Spoiler.
Zaxxon.
This is the 90s, and it's time for Klax. Let's get right into it. Chris Grant, you're our guest, our esteemed guest. So maybe you. By the way, Chris Plant has diarrhea. Chris Grant, what's your best thing of the week?
Pepto-Bismol. I use it preemptively.
So helpful.
Yeah. Sure. he drinks it like they do at the beginning of Problem Child.
I just want to make sure I don't ever have that problem.
Yeah.
My best thing of the week, I'm going to pronounce this for you. Rimmed capsule? Reamed capsule?
You want to spell it? Maybe that'll be easier, and people can just like it'll be like a fun game for the home team where they can try and say it themselves.
Guys, it's mostly full. It's got like umlauts in it. I'm not even sure.
This is the best use of consonants in a game title of 2013.
I'm gonna give them some credit though, because their Google juice on this term has to be absolute. I mean, they must perfect. Just dominate. It's RYMDKAPSEL.
Okay, now close the window and spell it again.
RYMDSKAPSEL.
Incorrect. But it was a good try. What's Rimmed Capsule, Chris?
So I haven't played a ton of it. It is a mobile game. It's for iOS and Android. The Android version is PlayStation Mobile compatible, which means you can also get it on your Vita if you want. It's like a strategy puzzle game. So it's kind of like strategy light.
Would you call it a struzzle?
No, I wouldn't actually.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah.
I would call it a streutzel.
Bacon on top.
Umlaut. But it's like a strategy light, although apparently it gets very complicated. Like I said, I haven't played a ton of it, but mixed with puzzles. So it's like every level is like a kind of puzzle that you need to beat, but you beat it using the kind of mechanics of base building and resource management. And it has these really kind of simple but elegant isometric flat graphics where you play as like little, you know, the characters are little, not the characters, the minions they call it, your little resource guys are little pixels, and it is a very unique aesthetic. It works really well on touch. It's really simple to control, and the fixed camera helps. It's on iOS. It is a universal app, so you can use it on your iPad. And I found on the iPad it is way easier to control. The text is so small on the iPhone, it's almost hard to read.
So what is the motivating factor for these little pixel people? What do they want? Heroin?
You wouldn't understand. I mean, you know,
because all that you want, Russ, is heroin. So it's like beyond your comprehension that anybody would want anything else for any reason.
Maybe they're sick of having their isometric plane attacked, by red pixels,
and they a red baron,
and they want to defend themselves.
Wait, yeah, plane?
Well, it's a they live on like a.
It's like a space station.
It's like a big plane.
No, it's a.
It. I've played some of it, and Chris isn't doing. Is it a so? Traditionally
it, but it's got wings,
it
and it flies. It's a plane.
It's no. It's a space station.
And this has been another installment of Homonym Theater with your
plane
host,
is a homonym.
Russ Preston.
There's. It's an isometric plane.
So it's boring.
No, it's. It's okay. Pretty. It's
more. They're. As you, I played some of it too. So let me just hop
in
because I played a lot. Your base has all the sort of basic components that you're used to with RTS. There's like reactors that you use to gather an energy resource. There are these like collection rooms that you have to attach to some sort of, I don't know what, if it's a gas or something.
It's like a,
you know,
it's like a floating resource that you
yeah,
grab.
Floating asteroid of some sort that you can mine to get more stuff. But all the rooms have to be connected by corridors, and it costs you energy to build more corridors and more rooms. And with more corridors and more rooms, you can build more rooms for minions. You can make a garden to feed more minions, that sort of thing. But you're expanding your base out to try to reach these monoliths that are floating in space. And if you reach them, you get an upgrade to your abilities. So, like, your defensive capabilities increase or movement speed of your minions increase. But you're constantly under threat of attack from these waves of red enemies. And you have actually a countdown timer on the screen that's telling you how close you are to an attack.
Stressful.
And your minions are actually the ones who have to do your base defense too. So the game is sort of about expanding your base and exploration and trying to reach these monoliths while still balancing your need for security and how much can you expand or how long can you go without, you know, returning to your defensive positions to try to pick those off. And you also have to expand because you need more minions to defend against the stronger waves that keep coming. So it's I mean, it's not like in terms of structure, I mean, it's not reinventing the strategy wheel, but to see it presented with like this minimally is really interesting and really clarifies it. So it's just, I mean, it's just the base elements of strategy.
As someone who hasn't played it, it's remains very sort of amorphous and hard to wrap my head around. Is there sort of like an elevator pitch of like why someone should play this?
Here's the elevator pitch for me.
Remember, this is a very short elevator ride.
Right. It's going to be less than a floor.
Yep.
Okay.
Fisher Price, my first strategy game.
Okay.
It's got
not exactly the best pitch.
So easy building block colors. 3-year-olds should be playing this strategy game.
It's not that it's easy. It's that
it's actually pretty hard.
Yeah, it's actually pretty hard. The joys are, I think, the same as a lot of strategy games. It's about, you know, expanding and the sort of enjoyment you get from building stronger defenses and making yourself tougher, and exploration, which is really cool because you don't know what the monoliths do until you reach them. So it's a little more goal-driven than a lot of strategy games, which are typically a lot of times about just conquering enemies. This is very much about exploring while you try to keep yourself alive. So that's an interesting sort of twist on what you normally get in a strategy game.
So iPad or PlayStation Mobile? Because it's out on that PlayStation Vita I've heard so much about, too.
So, here's an easy answer. What device do you have? Do you have both?
Let's say both.
I got it on iOS because it worked on my iPhone and my iPad. And the interface works really well on touch. So it's like, you know, it's not a twin stick shooter that I think is really going to benefit from the Vita. And I think the Vita, even with its improvements as a digital platform, is still a pretty bad one compared to most phones, even, you know, most Android phones.
God, you are such an X-bot. It's like not even like you're trying to disguise it. Like you're waving it like a proud banner now.
My Microsoft iPad is definitely. Here's the thing about the Vita for me. Number one, it's a dollar more on Vita, which is a little weird.
That's the deal breaker, ladies.
That's the buttons tax.
Yep. Yeah, but it's like, guys, I can play it on my iPad and my iPhone for a dollar less on a way more popular marketplace. Cool. Good job. You nailed it. Also, PlayStation Mobile, I mean, my concern with PlayStation Vita digital titles and why I'm a little conservative about buying them is, and I'm a new PlayStation Plus subscriber now, so I have the now monthly angst and anxiety of having to determine which of these new free games I want to download because I don't have enough room on my Vita.
What kind of card are you working with?
I got a 16 gig card.
Yeah, that's what
Fuck,
I got too.
What do you? That's plenty of room.
It's
mine's,
not.
What do you have
mine's
on
full
there?
Up. That's like four games.
That's like four games. Yeah, it fills up real fast. Real fast.
Four giga. Do you have fucking Skyrim and stuff? Like, what are you talking about?
But games
are
big.
4 gigabytes.
I've got Metal Gear Solid.
That's a big game. It's a lot of voice.
I've got Uncharted. I've got Persona. I've got Persona 3 from
PSP. Well, I don't think you need two Persona games.
I've got... But here's the problem. The act of managing your card on Vita is so bad.
Not anymore. They added cloud saving. Boop.
But they added cloud saving before. The problem is that in order to enable cloud saving, you had to do it... You had to manually back up your save games, like yourself. Or you could manually toggle it off or on for each application.
Don't live in the past... They fixed
but they
that.
Just updated. Yeah, just updated this week. I think Tuesday.
It's way easier.
Why are you wasting all of our listeners' time?
You're living in the past.
Because it's
Chris
good
Grant.
For them to know if they don't know.
Jack Trent is weeping. Shuhei doesn't know how to deal with the fact that you are living in a dark, dark age where cloud saving was a pain in the ass.
Called last week.
Here's
called
the last thing. Week. Let me put it this way: the way that they have it working today is still not as good as iOS, and iOS's iCloud backup. Is considered to be horrible.
I think it's actually better than iOS's iCloud backup.
How?
Because you can see like when everything was like when the last file was uploaded which one you
want
to replace.
I don't want to see any of that. All I want is for my save to always be available on Vita right now. If you go to delete a game, and you have not manually backed up your game, or if you are not a PS Plus subscriber, it will delete your save game.
And servers don't grow on trees, Chrissy.
And if you're not a PS Plus subscriber, you have to manually back up your save game over a USB cable or Wi-Fi to your computer or your PlayStation.
Why are you? I've literally never done this in my life.
Then
what are you doing with your life that you have to fucking secure your saves every other day?
Because if you're going to delete a game that you spent, if I'm going to delete Persona 4, I don't want to lose my save file just because I want that 3 gigabytes back.
Yeah, what's
why are you,
Junus
why are you deleting
gonna do?
It before you finish it?
But I'm saying no. But I'm saying if I finished
stumped.
It,
stumpers.
You troll. My point being is, it's bizarre to me that I can't store my save game separately from the game on my 16 gig, $8,000 PS Vita memory stick. So I tend to shy away from buying digital Vita games, especially if I don't have to. So for Rim Capsule, not only is it a dollar more. But it's going to take up room on my super expensive storage medium on my Vita.
Probably like 130 megs.
It's like, which is like $18 in the ratio.
Yeah.
point being is like if I store it there, it's a lot easier for me to store it on iOS. It's easy for me to delete and re-add on iOS. I never have to think about it. Whereas on Vita, it's a thing.
Flip side. Okay. Free games.
Yeah, flip side, free games, which is awesome.
Let's move on to another thing.
So I'm going to bring a game. I know we talk about discussing the latest and greatest newest releases on the Besties. But my best thing of the week is the best game for a bunch of people that I actually hate. And that game is Earthbound. Because Earthbound is awful, and I hated it.
Well, why are you bringing it, then? You're obviously just doing this to upset our fans.
Actually, it was mostly just to upset you, Griffin, because I know how much Earthbound is a part of your life.
Yeah, sure, but only to the extent that I've never played it, and I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
That can't be true.
That's 100%
true. But your
Animal Crossing town is named Onet.
Yeah, it's just a nice name for a town.
You are lying.
I swear to God. And to God. I've never played it. I played maybe like 10 minutes of it on emulator in high school. But
wow, this is bad.
I don't even know how to address this situation. I'm so thrown.
I have bad news for you, Frushtick.
I have never been able to get into it, though. And I just confess that I've played only 10 minutes of it. But like, for me, when I pick up a classic role-playing game and every interaction that you do goes through that check, talk, item, equip, magic menu, like, I'm fucking out.
Well, for
game, you're going to be long enough as is. I don't need you giving me a menu every time I try to
defend Earthbound, which I don't really want to
I will say this. I thought you were here to... All right.
I do want to say that Earthbound does have shortcuts for interactions, so if you want to talk to someone, it's just a one-button press. That being said, I think a lot of people love this game because when it came out, it was set in modern day, contrary to like a lot of RPGs of the era, which were set in fantasy or futuristic or whatever. This was like, oh, it's just a regular town and, you know, quirky characters and story, et cetera, et cetera. Hopping into it now, I'd never played the game until just last week or 2 weeks ago when it was released on Wii U. I was so struck by how painful it is to get through because the game is structured around a few things, one of which is like really like obtuse ways to progress through the game. Like, you're given an objective, and if you don't select like the right dialogue choice from a guy, for example, or very early in the game, you have to get into this garden that's guarded by thugs, and the thugs are like, "Do you want to join our club?" And I say yes to try to like sneak into the garden. They're like, "Well, too bad, go away." And the only way, I literally walked away for an hour, and the only way to get into that garden was to say no, and then that granted you magic access. So there's that, and also just the combat. Oh my god, it's just like so dry and grindy and dull. And it really goes to show, like, I think a lot of people probably have a lot of fondness. I know Chris Plant has a lot of fondness for Earthbound. But when you go back to it after 15 years.
So when you go back to play old games like that, it's for one of two reasons that I can think of. And one is that it is still mechanically very fun to play, or somehow the mechanics are almost like a niche. Like, nobody makes games like that.
Yeah, and there are plenty of old games that are still, like, Super Mario 1 is still a fun game to play.
Sure. Nintendo 64 is the fucking king of this, right? Because my favorite installments of all of Nintendo's games are more or less all on Nintendo 64. Like, when I'm hanging out drinking with my friends, it's Mario Kart 64.
Sure.
Or original Smash Brothers.
GoldenEye.
GoldenEye, sure.
I guess.
Although that one...
It's bad. It has not aged well.
But there are those games that are just, like, mechanically still either fun or unique in that nobody makes games like that anymore.
Yeah.
And then there is the nostalgia factor of just, like, being in love with sort of the world and the mood and the story and the characters of a game. And I think Earthbound is seated pretty securely in that second thing and not the first thing. And the problem is, like, I'm actually kind of jealous of the people who do love Earthbound because some of my favorite games are the games that I have just, like, unerring nostalgia for, and I don't have that for Earthbound, and so I doubt that I'll ever be able to get into it in the way that they do, because when a game is not mechanically sound, even when it does have the benefit of being like a nostalgic smorgasbord, I can't get into it. Yeah. I just can't. I have a very, very hard time. So like people who are paying $10 to play this game again on Wii U, and like loving the shit out of it, I'm imagining that most of those people are, you know, devouts already.
Yeah, but I think a lot of those people are also people that maybe don't remember just how grindy it is. Like, you remember the like super memorable moment, like when such and such sacrificed himself, blah blah blah, but you don't remember the two hours where you spent fighting ants in a cave over and over and over again until you were strong enough to beat the boss. And in a lot of ways, the game, the way it's structured, is made for children, because there's no death punishment. When you die, you don't lose any progress or experience. You just get sent back to a phone. And the idea is you could essentially just keep marching yourself into a dungeon, level up, level up, level up, until you're so powerful that you just crush everyone, and then you beat the boss. And for a kid, that would be like a satisfying way to spend an afternoon, because obviously, you know, you feel like you're getting more powerful. For people that play games to a certain extent that require a little bit of skill and thought, that's not a satisfying way. You don't feel like you accomplished anything. You felt like you had a pulse, and that was the only reason you got through it.
So, Earthbound came out in 1995.
Yep.
I was, I don't know, 16 or so.
Goddamn, you're old.
You are old.
I don't remember playing Earthbound. I never had it. None of my friends ever had it. It sold like 18 copies in the U.S., which is why it's
gone. It came in that giant box.
Kind of legendary status. Do you know what game I did play, which came out a little later in 1995?
I'm going to guess. Can I guess?
Yeah, guess.
Chrono Trigger.
No.
Oh, okay.
This game was by Square.
Okay.
So you're close.
Secret of Mana.
Secret of Evermore.
Secret of Evermore.
That game fucking rules, though.
The same nostalgic criteria that people use to define Earthbound, which is, man, it was the first time I played a game, you know, JRPG, or in this case it was made in America, but JRPG format, where it's like me, right? It takes place in America. You know, Secret of Evermore has the same...
I mean, it's not really... I don't even think that one of the four ages that game is set in... It opens up in Podunk USA, but it very quickly turns to, like, prehistoric past and then Roman ages.
Sure, but my point is it starts in Podunk USA. You play as a kid, and you have a dog that follows you around, and it's not fantasy. You know,
you reference all these... You do reference, like, all these modern-day fictional pulp movies, which is... God damn, I love that fucking game.
That game is so good. It uses the same combat, roughly, as Secret of Mana, which holds up really well still.
It was like it's real-time, like Zelda-y.
It's real-time, like Zelda-y, yeah. But RPG mechanics in there, like, you know, you level up, you have... You know,
you have a dog.
Stats.
You have a dog companion, and everyone loves that.
Who can shapeshift?
Well, Earthbound technically had a dog too.
My point being is, Secret of Evermore and Earthbound are really similar. It's straight up, you know, Armageddon and Deep Impact. Like these two games came out. Neither of them did well in North America. This was Secret of Evermore was by Square Enix North America. I think they were called or Square North America. It wasn't Square Enix at that point. And it was their first title. And it was like, okay, we're gonna make games in the West and appeal to that audience. And it did horribly, and then I think it was the last game they made too. I played that. Nobody, or at least most people, but you know, Griffin and I are the only two, remember that one. That game's not out on Virtual Console. When you put Secret of Evermore on Virtual Console for $10, I'm gonna freak out and buy it.
This is the thing, though. Like, the love that we have for that game is the same as the love that people have for Earthbound, and I imagine like people listened to the beginning of this segment and got like super pissed off. Like, you should feel very, very lucky that you feel pissed off, because I feel like I didn't miss many, like, fucking name any game from the SNES to PlayStation 1 role-playing game era, and like, man, I will go toe-to-toe with you, like Illusion of Gaia, yeah, sure, let's fucking rap about it, but I miss this one, and so none of us get to be a part of that.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Sadly,
club.
The one person that could comment is shitting his pants right now.
But like, that's good. That's good to be part of that club and like, see your game underrepresented, and like when it does come back, it's like, holy shit, like, I don't know, to have a reason to like celebrate the Wii U right now, like that's genuinely exciting. Like, I kind of regret that, but if you never played it,
I'd strongly recommend not, because you probably hate it.
As long as we're pointing out, you know, following the Vita discussion on portable consoles, I've been playing my 3DS a lot more lately, as it gets better games, and you know, as clumsy as it is, it doesn't suffer the same storage problem because you can just put on SD cards. They don't cost anything. You could swap them out. But you know what I think is bizarre to me, especially if you're charging $10 for a ROM of a nearly 20-year-old game.
What's that?
Why I can't buy it on 3DS?
It's completely inscrutable the way they've gated.
Yeah, it's terrible. Just
virtual it console across consoles. Yep, it makes no sense. The only thing I can think, like in absence of an explanation, like the only logical thing I can think is they want you to buy these fucking games twice.
Or I think they're using it to try and drive adoption of Wii U.
But there's no SNES games on 3DS, correct?
Well, yeah, I think you're right.
And that's bonkers to
it
me.
It doesn't make
any
sense to me, yeah.
Crazy.
I really would, if I could buy this game, no, especially if I could buy it, have it in a Nintendo cloud locker, and access it from my 3DS, or access it from my Wii U, or wherever, share the same save even, you know, hey, wink, wink. But even now, like, just the fact that it's $10, and I have to play it on my Wii U, which, I live downtown in Philadelphia, I can't even go to my kitchen and have my Wii U gamepad work properly. I can't go upstairs, so I have to play it on my couch. I just don't get it. I would play Earthbound. I would buy it today if I could play it on my 3DS, play it on the train.
There's a ton of Super Metroid in a heartbeat, Link to the Past in a heartbeat. Like, there's a ton of Super Nintendo games I would kill to have on 3DS.
I will never understand what policies are in place. Everybody needs money, right? Like, I know that there's always, like, with the Nintendo stuff especially, there's all these, like, old licenses, and people sometimes don't even know, like, who has rights to
what. But not for Super Metroid.
Yeah, and also,
wants money.
No company, if any company on the earth can make that excuse, it's not fucking Nintendo, because all of their games that people want to play, like, most of them are first party.
Right.
Almost all of them were published by Nintendo that aren't first party. Like,
yeah, there's no rights issue here.
Secret of Evermore.
It's perplexing.
Secret of Evermore wasn't published by Nintendo?
I don't think so. It's Square.
It has to be. I mean, it has to be them just wanting to leave a clean playing field for some of their older games. But that just, that seems crazy to me, too, because this is like free money. You already made this game.
But no, you can play Game Boy games.
What I would say, I mean, maybe this is a little accusatory, what I would say, Nintendo apologists, when I complain about their virtual console strategy, which is, I think, really, I hesitate to even call it a strategy, people usually say, oh, well, if they released them all, they would all get drowned out, and then nobody would know, and they wouldn't be able to promote each game as it comes out. And it's like, my question is usually, what came out this week? If they're putting such a spotlight on it, what came out this week? Like, nobody knows. The reality is, people are buying Ouyas to be emulation boxes because you can just download it and get a torrent full of every ROM ever. And for $10 for Earthbound, when it doesn't work on your 3DS, when you can't save it, and when I'm not even sure if it'll work on my Wii U 2 when that comes out in a year.
Yeah.
Because Nintendo has never shown a willingness to allow you to move your software content from one device to another. So
well,
I'm legitimately
not the virtual console shit, but I mean they were actually pretty good about getting eShop games that I bought on my DS to transfer over to the 3DS, and then 3DS to the 3DS XL, and same with the Wii to Wii U.
Well, Wii to Wii U you pay.
Yeah, there's an upgrade fee.
They go over.
Well, for
you go
virtual
into the
console
Wii menu.
Right. For virtual console games, but not for eShop games, right?
I think so, yeah. I think for all those games it goes onto your Wii U, and if you want to if it becomes available on the Wii U market, it goes into the Wii menu.
Whatever it is, there's no question that it's bonkers and like totally out of whack.
Elegant.
And you think to like, what's that Newell quote where he says piracy is a service issue and
it's
we need to, and we need to offer a better service. Nintendo is not offering a good alternative to piracy right now, or piracy of
the
seas for that.
They're suing the shit out of everybody that hoves into their field of vision. In terms of piracy.
Yeah.
That's their piracy strategy is not to make a better product or to compete. It's just to sue anybody.
Right.
That
fans that upload gameplay videos online sue them too.
Right.
Like, it's crazy to me.
They're not suing them. They're just taking all the money they make off of.
Right.
Hosting. You guys, you fucking Xbox are like totally bringing down my Nintendo train. Let's go to halftime.
Halftime.
halftime. Oh, we didn't talk about this. Did something happen to anybody?
Well, Dez got her heart broken. Oh, wait, we talked about that last week.
Well, we tried to. Oh,
I missed that?
We tried to, but we decided it was not probably something to talk about.
Talk about QuakeCon.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about QuakeCon. Because, okay.
That'll transition into my thing nicely. I went to QuakeCon.
Was it like balls hot?
I mean, I'm from Austin. I drove up 3 hours. It wasn't like...
Yeah.
It went from like 106 degrees to 108 degrees.
Are those serious numbers, or are those like...
It's 107 degrees in Austin.
That's... Why? No.
It's a dry heat.
Ooh. It's a dry... No shitting, Russ. Like, I'll go sit outside in a beer garden right now. Like, it's the driest heat. You sweat for like 3 minutes, and then you're totally over it.
Yeah, because you're dead.
Yeah, because you die. All the fluid leaves your body.
That's horrifying. But is the show fun to go to?
I love this show. Okay. I love the show for a number of reasons. One, it's in the Hilton Anatole, which is like a pretty sweet hotel. No pun intended, I guess, because like suites are things.
A hotel suite, right?
Yeah.
I got it.
I didn't stay in a hotel suite. It's great to. When you are a man of my work ethic, it is wonderful to poop where you eat and also where you work and sleep. I pooped and I ate and I worked and I slept all in the same building. And that was good for like a person like me.
Yeah.
Which is to say the human equivalent of a three-toed sloth.
So it's essentially like the ballrooms are taken up by the conference... And your room is upstairs, and that's pretty much
my room is upstairs. There's one sort of like mid-sized conference hall. It's not even comparable to an E3 or a PAX. So, there are only a couple of companies showing off actual games that weren't Bethesda, although Bethesda was showing off like quite a few games.
So if you were to meet like a John Romero cosplayer, you could take him right back to your room right upstairs.
And let me tell you, Chris, my first night there. And I don't want to get blue or bawdy on this podcast for children, but I was, let's say, perturbed. Let's just say I was unable to go to sleep because of, let's call them, good vibrations.
Oh.
My bed was flush with the wall, and...
A lot of fragging going on next door?
There was some fragging.
Was there?
Somebody had their fingers on WASD and were doing some major
maybe
gibbage.
Some blast processing?
There was a little bit of rocket jumping happening in the other room.
Were there gibs? Were there gibs?
There were gibs everywhere. It was, no joke.
What is mega
it?
Textures?
Were they fucking? Damn it.
My bed was literally like shaking. So furious was the sex that the people were having in the other room.
60 frames a second, maybe even.
Yeah, maybe 60 pumps a second. It was crazy, and it lasted an hour. So kudos, whoa. I guess.
Well done. So you should mention though, you're not entirely sure that it was two people. It could have just been one person in like an Oculus.
And that special plug-in. Now, I mean, I didn't hear anything, so you have a good point. The pumping was erratic, so I know it wasn't some sort of piston.
Okay.
It wasn't pneumatic in nature. Yeah. Anyway, I'm grossed out continuing to talk about this. I mean, there's like a lot of like, you know, screaming down the hall.
Did they have the John Carmack keynote playing in the background for like mood music?
I actually made that joke on Twitter. And somebody said that was just John Carmack coding something. That talk went on almost 3 hours, which is shorter than usual. My computer did die. My MacBook Air, which traditionally has a pretty beefy battery, Carmack fucking killed it again.
Can't hold up.
Do you think he saps energy from nearby computer sources with his robot brain?
Maybe. No, the show is genuinely like a lot of fun. Like you can tell, and I'm not. I hope I don't sound like demeaning or like, oh look at this nerd zoo, like, because that's like I'm being as genuine as I possibly can. Like it is nice to be around a group of people who it like playing video games this way so much, and like this is it for them. This is it. This is their last vestige of a local multiplayer party of this scope.
Well, like, PAX. This is come on.
No, it's not that you don't understand. Like, you haven't been to QuakeCon. You don't
Clearly
understand
not.
How just how much is it. We're talking about an entire, I think it's two ballrooms with the wall in the middle taken out, with like thousands and thousands and thousands of people who have brought their own computers, all locally connected to play video games together. And like the dedication
games?
And how just fucking psyched they are to be there is like intoxicating. It's awesome. Not only like just like walking around that room and like being reminded of old games and like seeing people play old games in multiplayer that you didn't know people were still fucking into, like oh god, what was that one game, Justin, that we played where it was two factions playing against each other and it was like kind of a fantasy strategy?
Chex Quest.
Huh?
Chex Quest.
No, it wasn't Chex Quest. And like one person from each team was the commander, and they could like
Savage?
Something Savage, like maybe. I saw like people play. I saw people playing that, and it's like, who the fuck is like? This is the only time of year this person's gonna play this game, and that's why they stay up for two straight days doing it.
You know what's like, you know what's interesting this week in terms of end of an era.
Well, that's my that's actually the thing I'm bringing. So if you would mind like not ruining it,
no, go into it. I'm just saying, do it.
So my story this week that I'm bringing, the best thing, because I think at the end of the day it is a good thing. John Carmack is going to become the CTO, the chief technology officer, the chief techno orifice of Oculus 3D for the Oculus Rift.
And what would you say that is the best of products?
Best career move? There I don't go. Know, man. It's... So covering QuakeCon, and I've only done it 2 years now, and I really do like the show, but it is kind of an exercise in futility when it comes to like getting anything on Doom, because nobody really wants to talk about it, which is perplexing, right? Like, in the absence of any official information beyond Pete Hines from Bethesda did confirm that they rebooted the game in 2011, which if you didn't read that Kotaku report, that cited a few sources working on the game anonymously, like, the shit is not great with Doom 4. Like, the development has been troubled, to say the least. And instead of, like, coming out and being transparent and, like, giving updates to sort of try and convince the community that is stuck by the Doom franchise all these years that everything's going okay, it's just been, like, here's the perfect example of sort of their strategy. Nobody said the words Doom or Doom 4 to me the entire weekend. Like, if I asked them about Doom 4, they would talk about their current project. And like, I know, you know, it's not Doom 4, because last year all they talked about was, we are not doing anything else but Doom 4. Like, they scrapped their mobile game initiatives. They said, like, we're focusing, so we are all hands.
So they Doom say, right, so you ask a question about Doom 4, and they're like, well, with our current project.
Right.
Like, which nobody has to be Doom 4.
It's not fucking Voldemort. Like, you can say the name of the game. Like, we're not gonna. I don't understand the strategy of, like, being so.
You know what it might be? This is the only thing I can think of, and it's bonkers, but maybe by doing it that way, you essentially, when it does, like, eventually reappear, which presumably it will, it becomes more of a to-do, because essentially no one's, like, officially talked about it for the last 3 years.
Yeah.
It's the only thing I can think
like
of.
Like, they're trying to put the genie back in the bottle, as it were.
But here's the thing. Carmack was the technology chief.
Chief robot.
He was chief robot for id Software. Yep. He's building id Tech 5, which is going... It was... Parts of it were in Doom 3 BFG edition, but it is like fully powering Doom 4. It's fully powering Wolfenstein the New
Rage. It also powered Rage. And in a lot of ways, I think one of the reasons I think Carmack left is he's no longer building.
Right. He said during his talk, when somebody asked how like work was going on in Tech 5, he basically characterized like what they were doing as optimization. Because it, like, they just delayed Wolfenstein a couple months. It's going into 2014. But like, that game's getting pretty close, and like it's too far along now for them to make any like super substantial changes to id Tech 5. I would assume for them to sort of incorporate those changes into development, because like what I played seemed pretty, like, it was short, but it seemed pretty, I don't know.
I would be curious to see how much the response to Rage has shaped sort of the
What do you mean by the response to Rage?
Rage was
not well liked universally.
Not the universal hit that I think
Okay, I wouldn't characterize its critical response as being like it's got like an 80-81 on Metacritic. Like critically it was pretty well received. Commercially is where the wheels fell off the fucking line. We could have a discussion about the merits of its critical response.
It was not a great game. It was a good game. It was not a great game. And I think if you're going to sink that kind of time and resources into the kind of games that it makes, like, it has to be... You know, I think it would be similar to if, like, Bethesda put up one of their big open world games. Yeah. That's very much like each one is not only a massive investment of time, resources, energy, and money. It's also very much a statement of, like, here is
this
where...
This is our company.
Where... This is our company. This is where we're at right now.
If Skyrim got an 8 out of 10 on average, that would be a massive failure.
But we're kind
of... And I'm wondering if they're second-guessing because, like, by and large, the response to Rage, which was like, this is where we are as a company. This is who we are. This is where we want to go. The response was very much like, huh, well...
Okay, we're kind of getting away from the thing, but, like, the reason that Bethesda's not releasing a game this year, I think, is because they learned their lesson from... the past couple years when they released Rage, but I mean, they're also building this IP catalog, which, like, other than Dishonored, almost across the board, has not been a winning strategy for them. They had Rogue Warrior, they had Wet, they had Brink. Like, that strategy is not paying big dividends. So I think that next year, when they do release Wolfenstein and Elder Scrolls Online, which is another segue within a segue, looking pretty fucking good.
I would not, by the way, characterize Wet, Rogue Warrior, and whatever as part of the same initiative that brought Dishonored to us. That was very much
was
a play to, like, let's try to buy our way into being an actual publisher as cheaply as we possibly can.
Right, but I think that there were... There's some crossover between those. What I'm saying is that their strategy now is we can't become a better publisher, and we can't build this respected IP library by just, like, releasing games in new intellectual property, like, as quickly as we possibly can, because, like...
I think their strategy now is it's simple. The old strategy was make some good internal games and publish whatever you can get your hands on cheap. Their new strategy is owned and operated. Like, everything they're doing is owned and operated. Prey 2 failed externally at Human Head. I would not be surprised to see Prey 2 rebooted inside of a studio like Arcane or inside of id.
Anyway, all of that is completely unrelated to John Carmack. I think ultimately you guys are right. I think John Carmack just wasn't fucking doing...
But he didn't leave, let's be clear. He's still working there.
Despite the fact that, like, so many people... who reported this story said that he was leaving, which, like, to in their defense, I think even the press release that announced his new position said that he formerly of id Software, which is not true. He's very much still there, but, like, he in a tweet said that his breakdown of time is now mostly Oculus Rift, second id Software, third Armadillo Aerospace, billions of dollars that I'm flushing down the toilet.
Gonna be the
John,
first man on
John
Mars.
John Carmack's rocket explosion slush fund. But ultimately, like, I think it's a good thing. I've only met Carmack once. I actually kind of...
I want to be John Carmack's accountant. Like, okay, John, let's break this down. You've got a pretty good chunk of dough coming in from making all these great games, and you have a line item here in your budget for just burning money, and it's not burning so much as you're putting in a rocket and blowing it up. Yeah, like, what is
that? That's also the Richard Garriott accountant. He's very depressed.
He talked about... Right, except Garriott made it to fucking space on someone else's rocket.
Garriott, a lot of people don't know that once Garriott made it to space, he actually took a shit on a picture of John Carmack. A lot of people don't know that, but it's true. He wiped his ass with
Carmack talked during his keynote about how, like, he's basically out of the aeronautics game for a while because, like, he basically had to run it by his wife. Like, hey, I know we're super rich. I'm going to take a couple mil, and it'll be Johnny's fun money. And then he built a lot of exploding rockets with that. He killed a lot of space dogs. And then, I'm just kidding. I can't confirm or deny if there were dogs in the room.
Laika.
Anyway,
I like Carmack because Carmack's always been a guy that follows, and the reason I like this news, and it kind of like you'll remember a lot of people that the Oculus Rift lost its last sort of like big thinker when he was killed in a sort of very random hit, and I shouldn't say big thinker. I say that just because I don't recall his technical
title.
He's
one of the co-founders, right?
One of the co-founders of the company, yeah, lost him in a sort of tragic, very bizarre hit and run during a police chase. So I do wonder if there's a sense of you know, trying to help remedy that has led Carmack into this new gig.
Yeah, it's just honestly, I think it is not them acquiring Carmack. I think it is like when I met Carmack, it was during a Doom 3 BFG edition demo on Oculus Rift. It was my first time meeting Carmack and my first time playing Oculus Rift. And it was like the most exciting thing because he was so fucking excited about it. Like he was like overjoyed to be the person to sort of introduce this to the press, because at this time last year, like Oculus wasn't nearly at the level where it is now, where like a lot of people have played it at events. He's just like very, very enthusiastic about what they're doing. And I think the sort of tide of press towards Oculus Rift has changed over the past year from being like, look at this oddity, like look at this crazy VR thing that is sort of going to become like this boutique piece of hardware, to like, and I think Carmack's joining the company gives it legitimacy to like, this is the fucking future. Like, this is a thing that a lot of us are going to own and play games on, and it's going to provide an experience that we cannot get with any other device on the market right now.
Keep in mind with Carmack and Oculus, the first time when we were still publishing under The Verge, we did a report. We had one of the first stories on the Rift, and it was not Oculus Rift showing us this device. It was John Carmack showing it to us in his lab. Like, Carmack consulted on it early on. I guess the story is that Palmer Luckey built it and like reached out to people like Carmack, and Carmack basically told him like, you did it. Like,
right.
You know, nobody else has figured it out. You did it. This is the real deal. Carmack's been an advocate for this thing forever. Some of the first demos we ever saw of Oculus Rift were from Id. So like, you know, he's had a long history with them. He loves the thing. And to me, it definitely seems like him following his gut, you know.
And it also seems like Carmack just fucking loves disclosure. That's why he does a 3-hour long keynote speech every year at QuakeCon. He just likes talking about his ideas and like the things he's working on and trends that he sees in the technology space that like nobody else is really doing in the entire games industry, at least not with the intellect that Carmack is putting forward.
And the benefit,
he's now going from a company where he's not allowed to talk about anything.
Right.
His 3-hour keynote, I timed it out. He talked for 7 seconds about Doom 4. And he said, I asked, and they said I couldn't talk about Doom 4. So, like, now he's going from a place where he can't talk about it. Like, there's this inexplicable gag order about the project he's most closely working on, to a company where he can, like, do fucking daily blog posts talking about the latency and I don't know. Yeah, like, I'm excited, like, for him.
So much like grokking. Like, you could get so deep into like how to make a cool Oculus game, and there's so much like nitty gritty technical and like feel stuff that he could just go nuts over. And I think it's great news for everyone. I'm super excited that he is over there. And I love the Oculus. I want to use it more. Although I will say that Dear Esther made me want to vomit for about 3 hours after playing. Yeah. But other than that, I thought it was amazing.
Let's get to our...
I want to talk about my thing. My special thing. My best single-player co-op game of the year.
Wait.
Single-player what?
Single-player co-op. Okay, so Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons.
Brothers.
It is a game, the new game from Starbreeze. It's on XBLA right now, and it's coming to PC and PS3, I think, September 3rd, somewhere in there. So in Brothers is a fantasy, I guess, puzzle platformer, for lack of a better term. You control two brothers just named Little and Big. They're never, there's no names. There's actually no dialogue that's spoken in English.
Big the cat?
No.
No relation. Brother,
Is how he's referred to in the UI, which is really the only referral we get. In Brothers, you are controlling both of them simultaneously. Big Brother is on the left thumbstick, and Little Brother is on the right thumbstick. And since you can't press any buttons as a result, all the interaction is with the triggers. So anytime you want to interact with something, be it like lift someone up a cliff or pick something up or call for your brother to point something out to him, that you do it with the trigger, which is actually a really beyond the sort of central controls conceit, which is super interesting, is also a great testament to how overcomplicated we've made a lot of control schemes. This is all super contextual, and it all works great. But what's a little challenging at first is trying to control two characters with two different hands, which is not like intuitive, at least at first. But I talked about this in my review, by learning to control both of them together and getting better at it, it is actually sort of an interesting mechanical stand-in for the relationship between the two of them. So you, as your brain puts together those two parts that are controlling both of them, I started to at least feel a little bit more of a connection between the brothers.
You said it's like because they're as you are learning to make them work together, they are learning to work together. Like, that's sort of...
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, and a lot of that's just implied. I mean, it's implied through some of the stuff that happens in the game, but it's largely implied just through your own experiences with them. I've really hesitated to, and I'm going to continue to here, I don't want to talk about almost anything because it's so great about introducing interesting gameplay ideas and then moving on once it has introduced
run
them
its course.
And run its course, and not even run its course, it's like they almost always leave you wanting more.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that was neat. I'm glad I didn't get tired of that before they stopped doing it. But the game actually has some really interesting things to say, and I think important things to say, and it says them all through mechanics. I was completely unprepared for the game. I was not like, I first heard of it like literally when Arthur sent me the
review. Was it like shown at E3? I don't even know.
I think it was. It's a 505 game. Like, that's who's publishing it, so it's like not a big publisher behind it, which is part of it. But it's the first time of arcade game, so, you know, hopefully it's getting a push there. But it's a fascinating, like, wonderful game that's short and you don't want it spoiled for you. So
one of the things that I
go buy it. It's like 3 hours long.
I can't remember if I read it in your review or somewhere else, but one of the things that I read about it that like blew my mind was in terms of like using controls to tell, and basically only controls to tell a story, is the character development inherent in just using the left and right thumbsticks, because your left hand is so used to controlling the movement of characters in a 3D space. So the big brother moves around sort of confidently and in the direction you want them to go, while the little brother is mapped to the right thumbstick, which you're not used to moving characters in space with. So he's like almost always
clumsier.
Like, no, clumsier and like moving in errant directions and getting lost, and like that sort of says something about the characters.
That's a great like example of, I didn't point that out specifically in my review, and that's a great point. It didn't even occur to me really while I was playing, but there's all kinds of little things like that. Like there's this one bit that I talked about in the review, but I'll use a different one because there are many. You come across this guy playing a harp. And if you walk up to the guy with Little Brother and pull the interaction trigger, he like takes a shot at it and plays like a little tune, and the guy playing it like applauds for him. If you try it with Big Brother, he's like clumsier and not good at it and gets kind of embarrassed for trying. And like, that's a tiny thing that you can run right by. All the achievements are actually tied to moments like that, like seeking stuff like that out and just finding neat little moments that have no effect on the gameplay or the outcome of the game. They're just there for you to discover. The whole game's beautiful, which helps. Like, you want to seek out these vistas because they're, like, gorgeous. But
it's interesting, though, because the controls are so simple, that lends itself to a lot of mystery, because essentially, like, you don't know what hitting the interaction button is going to do when you're standing next to someone. And you wouldn't get that if you're playing, like, an Assassin's Creed where, like, you know what jump is, you know what climb is.
Yeah, you never get a prompt or anything like that. I mean, a lot of times that's part of the challenge of the game. It's not a hard game, but there are moments where you're, like, not sure what to do, and largely it comes down to experimentation. I mean, trying to figure out, okay, I wonder if they'll do this if I pull the trigger.
Yeah.
Which helps, I think, build a sense of an independent character for them, too, because a lot of times what they do is seems to be decided on their own recognizance, rather than you saying, like, okay, shoot the rocket launcher now.
Yeah.
The rocket launcher edition late game is super weird and kind of imbalances the whole thing.
Can you get prestige and do a gold skin on it, or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
cool.
It's similar to Journey.
Awesome.
There's a hidden gold cape. It's marvelous. I can't recommend it enough. And seriously, if you wait too long, it's going to be one of those things that people are going to be dying to talk about, and I don't want it to be ruined for you. So try to stay dark on it at least until, you know, September, if you have to wait for those platforms. Because it is great. It's a great game. You should buy it right now.
Cool.
And take your time with it. Don't rush through it, because you really could. I'm surprised I haven't heard more gripes about the length.
Sounds like it's about as long as Limbo.
The Limbo is a good parallel.
What's the price on it? What's the price on this bad boy?
It's going to get you $15.
Oofies. Oofies. That's just... That's like a
movie
tickets.
Yeah.
But it's not the length of two movies, which is true.
Well, hold on. That's two.
No, that's
two
one
Austin,
movie ticket.
Texas
where do you live?
Movie tickets.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. That is one.
Literally
New York
one movie ticket. Actually, not as much as a 3D movie ticket. Cheaper than a 3D movie. This is the horror I live in.
Why are you seeing movies ever?
Let's just ignore the breadbasket, I guess. Let's just explore like the middle working class. That's perfect. A perfect end to a perfect episode.
Despite my hearty recommendation, I understand that nobody on this call has played it yet. I'm not sure anybody else on staff has, which makes me wonder
Jimmy
how much
has played it, and he loved it.
Okay, thank God. At least there's Jimmy.
Do you think it's designed for people who have brothers, and it's very affecting?
No joke. That probably
I have a brother
helped. Like it. I think that because I have more of a connection like that, it got me.
Well, here's the
more
thing, Griffin.
It might for other people.
Justin was all like, I'm big brother. I'm confident. Look how boldly I move. I move with purpose. And then little brother's all like, I'm an
drunk.
Idiot. I can't do it.
Well, he probably actually visualized Travis.
Which is fine.
There's three of us, and there's only two players in the game. So, like, that's totally understandable.
Yeah.
But go buy Brothers right now. And that's going to do it for us here on the Besties. Let's pick the best. What was the best thing? I really liked that John Carmack news.
I kind of want to vote for Brothers, to be honest, because it's the one thing that, like, I'm most pumped about, especially after reading your review and seeing the video review. It was so poetic, and I'm not even being facetious. I actually thought you did an amazing job.
Go read the review and watch the video. It's very
so I would vote for Brothers.
All right, I did it for once.
Yeah. Well, I didn't vote.
No one cares.
You don't need to.
Okay, you don't need to. You're a guest. That's going to do it for us this week on The Besties. Thank you so much again for listening. Thank you to our special guest, Chris Grant. If you want to get more video game content, more video game media.
just content. Look, you always
content.
Want words with images.
Open up your trawl and let the content fall in. Polygon.com, at Polygon on Twitter, Facebook.com/Polygon, YouTube.com/Polygon, polygon.com.tumblr.com. We have many avenues for you to explore. Google.com/plus polygon.
Polygon is a new one.
Yeah, there's so much. Thank you for listening to our show. Please share it with a friend if you can. Give us a review on iTunes, and make sure you join us again next Friday for The Besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best things?
Besties!